This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Oakwood Cemetery in downtown Raleigh is the final resting place for more than 20,000 citizens, including prominent state and national leaders like Senator Jesse Helms and big community characters like the legendary basketball coach Jim Valvano. A collaboration between Burning Coal Theater and Oakwood Cemetery honors the stories of some of the deceased each year through stage productions. This year's theme is Protesters and Activists. The production is going to take place on the cemetery grounds this weekend and features 10 one-act plays. We'll preview some of them today in our studio, and joining me first is Executive Director of Oakwood Cemetery, Robin Simonton. Robin, welcome to The State of Things. Good to talk with you.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Tell us, give us some of the history of Oakwood Cemetery. It has quite a history, doesn't it?
It does. You know, we're 146 years old. We started actually as a Confederate cemetery 148 years ago. And then the town leaders realized that there was no more room for the dead at Raleigh City Cemetery. And so we were chartered by the state of North Carolina in 1869. Over 20,000 people rest there, and we still bury folks today. So quite a history.
Who are some of the most notable figures?
As you said, Jesse Helms, Jimmy V, Elizabeth Edwards is always very popular. And then just some more local folks. You know, we have what we call the Indian Princess buried there. Rachel Blythe Bower has a unique headstone. And, of course, the Confederates draw a lot of attention.
So tell us now about this partnership with Burning Coal. How did it come about?
You know, we were just figuring out, we think it's about 10 years old. And about 10 years ago, the marketing staff at the cemetery met with the Burning Coal Theater. We thought it would be a good idea, kind of like that Spoon River anthology idea of the people buried in the cemetery coming to life and talking about what their lives were like. And what a great way to let history come to life, no pun intended, in such a non-traditional form. They started it back then, and it's kept going strong all these years. And we at the cemetery, like I said, love to see this, and we know our visitors do too. So it's an amazing partnership that we're very
proud
of.
You can't do that Dorothy Parker show, have one on me, because you don't have Dorothy Parker.
True.
But that's kind of a cool idea too. Well, I'm joined now by one of the actors from this year's production, George Jack, who in fact has participated in nearly every Oakwood Lives production. George Jack, welcome to the State.
Thank you very much. Good to have you here.
What about these productions now? You've been involved in many of them. How have they changed over time?
I've been in all but one, and I think Robin and I were talking. I think we started in the spring of 2006, and that production was a full blown costume fest of a sort. We borrowed uniforms from reenactors in town. The ladies wore hoop skirts. We were wearing wool uniforms. And that was a sort of a movable feast, if you will, in the cemetery. We went from one location to another throughout the whole cemetery. Then in subsequent years, we've pulled back a little bit on the costuming. We tend to now have a base costume and then add pieces to it that are appropriate for the characters. And for the last few years, we have picked locations within the cemetery itself where the graves of the characters that we're portraying are close by, and those have been seated performances.
The fabric moving more towards seersucker, would you think?
Yes, and cotton, nice breathable cotton.
Yeah. Well, now this year you play the Reverend John Wesley Jenkins in one of the plays that characterizes some of really Raleigh's history. Tell us a little bit about that character and the premise of the piece itself.
Well, Jenkins, he served he was a chaplain at the Battle of Sharpsburg, and that's where the play begins. The play called One Story, written by Ian Finley, and I should mention Ian has been sort of the longest-serving playwright of this process. He wrote all of the material for about actually up until the last 2 years. And then Burning Coal has decided to try something different and have different playwrights now write self-contained one-acts. What was your question?
We're talking about John Wesley Jenkins,
yes.
The minister, and
yes.
His story in this particular play.
So he served at the Battle of Sharpsburg, and it left such an impression on him when he came to live in Raleigh. He became a Methodist minister, but he was still haunted by what he saw. As he says at one point in the play, he still had a very strong faith in God, but he had pretty much lost his faith in his fellow men, and he felt that they had lost it in him. He felt like he was a failure for a large part. He had he was divorced twice, widowed once, and then he came upon the idea of founding an orphanage in Raleigh. And I think part of that is because of the what he experienced in the war and the fact that so many families now had been destroyed by the war. And it took him a while, but eventually the North Carolina Conference of the Methodist Church funded an orphanage. And he then became the head of that for a few years, found purpose, found his fourth wife, and really seemed to enjoy
the rest of his life. We recorded a part of a scene from one story earlier today, and we're going to play that now. But do we need to set that up at all?
Well, what you're about to hear is the beginning of the play itself. You'll hear three voices. You'll hear mine as John Wesley Jenkins, and then you'll also hear well, spoiler alert, you'll also hear older lady's voice who talks about when she was a child, and then you'll hear the third voice of a slave who had escaped on the North Carolina coast. And as the play comes together, you realize that, in fact, their history, though it begins separately in the play, is really very intertwined.
Let's listen.
Hunger.
Horror.
Fear.
The sound of the cannonade. The percussion of musket fire. Closer and coming closer. Flashes, bayonets.
In the hold of the ship we are laid in like logs, like barrels, like corpses. Each next to each, laid on top of each.
I have not eaten in 3 days. I am 7 years old.
The men march on. Waves of gray, broken by bursts of red, brown. Marching, singing Dixie to keep up their spirits. It doesn't work.
The crossing from Guinea took 7 weeks, but there was no way to tell the days. No sun in the hold, only the roll of the wave and the stench and the terror.
My mother died, and my father left. And I have known aunts and neighbors and ladies of the church, but never for long.
We were chained together, the hundreds of us, shackled at the ankles, shackles cutting into feet swollen from the march to the coast, sprayed with salt water and fresh blood.
Edwards has gangrene. The surgeon will amputate. The bone saw is ready. I am there to hold Edward's hand. I pray with him. It doesn't work.
Raleigh is a small city, but I am a small girl, and it is easy to get lost. No parents, no brothers, no sisters, no.
One of each of the four of us would die on the waters and be thrown overboard into the black wave, stiff with death, like a log no longer needed.
He bites down on the bullet casing. He grips my hand. Our Father, who art in heaven, I try to give him comfort. It doesn't work.
And then the ship went down, faltered in the storm off the coast, and the hundreds went together into the black wave, chained together, dragging each other down.
I am hungry. I am so hungry. Please, I am so hungry.
I was one of six that made it to the shore.
Raleigh, 1897.
Sharpsburg, 1862.
New Bern, 1795.
My name is Carrie Bright. I am a child, alone.
My name is John Wesley Jenkins. I'm buried just over the hill in the Magnolia section.
My name is Amar, which means he who builds.
But this is not my story.
This is not my story. Not mine alone. Never alone.
Actors Anne Forstoffel, DJ Wilkes, and George Jack doing a scene from the play One Story, part of the weekend's performance at Oakwood Lives in Oakwood Cemetery. And George, we have a former slave who owned the land on which the orphanage was built, the mm-hmm. man who founded the orphanage, and the first young
lady who was a resident.
A resident there. What did you learn anything about Raleigh's history just getting ready for this play?
Oh, this has been one of the best free educations that I've had. The opportunity to do these plays and to do some research into the characters itself. And in fact, one of the things that we came to realize, we do have some folks in the neighborhood who sort of loyally come and see these shows, but we also have a number of people who come who have just moved to Raleigh and they find out about this show and they want to find out something about the town where they're living, and so they come and see these. And I've enjoyed everything that I've read.
Well, one of the other people you will learn about is the Peanut Man, and to tell us more about him, we're joined by Brooke North. He's one of the playwrights for this production. He wrote the play Peanut Man. Brooke, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Tell us more about the Peanut Man.
The Peanut Man is Jesse Littleton Broyles. He actually passed away relatively recently, and it might be the most recent a resident in that we're going to feature, passed away in 2003. But he was a very much a local character here in Raleigh, and so he sold peanuts on the old State House grounds from around 1963 to, or from, see, I brought some notes because it's been a little while, from about 1963 to 1981. He had a peanut cart, and he was also he would sell the peanuts and feed the pigeons.
But a well-known character. I mean, everybody knew the Peanut Man, and he was somebody who served in World War II and just made his living kind of getting to know the people in and around that the State House, right?
That's correct, yeah. He served in World War II. He served in Iwo Jima, and he came back and had a number of jobs in the area, but really became a local character when he became the Peanut Man. And part of writing the play that was really interesting to me and exciting for me was the fact that, you know, he is in living memory. So one of the main things I did in terms of research was to reach out to people who had interacted with him, who had bought peanuts from him, who remembered, you know, who remembered feeding the birds with him and remembered him universally fondly. So that was a really nice aspect of the process for me.
Well, The Peanut Man is one of several one-act plays that will be staged this weekend in Oakwood Cemetery as part of Oakwood Lives. Jackie Nolhoff is the director, and I welcome her to the State of Things. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Now, tell us about directing this program. As we say, about 10 years ago, you used to go from site to site. Now you're in one place, right?
Yes, and I was given the project with the knowledge that everyone else had been doing this for a long time and had been doing it their own way, and I've had to reach out to people I didn't know to write plays and reach out to actors and everyone that I could to ask them to do this, and everyone came in full force, and it was wonderful. Now we have, I think this is the largest set of one acts we've ever had, so we're doing 8 10-minute plays. And we're honoring some really great people. And, like, I'm not from North Carolina. So actually learning about these people was incredibly interesting and wonderful to have come down here and learn something.
So where are you going to stage these shows?
We're going to stage them in the mausoleum in the cemetery themselves. So that's going to be fun. Everyone's going to be sitting around people, dead people.
Yeah.
And we do sell tickets at the cemetery right in front of the mausoleum before you go in to see the performance. So,
well, what are some of the challenges of producing a show like that in that environment?
There's lots of outside influence that we have to take into account in our audience. And just in general, we have to take an account of being respectful. And especially with our words, we just have to really be honoring these people.
So who are some of the other characters that we're going to meet?
The other people we're going to meet is Needy Broughton, who of the Raleigh High School. We're also going to meet Nell Cornelia
Lewis.
And then we're going to meet Sophia Arms Partridge, Dr. Hook, and we're going to meet Benjamin Rufus Weaver.
Now, who are these people and what they do?
Benjamin Rufus Weaver was a doctor. He was the first man to separate the nervous system from the human body.
To keep mine where it is. What kind of accomplishment is that?
Someone needed to do it. If it wasn't him, who would?
If you had to study. All right.
And then Dr. Hook, he invented the bone carpentry, which is basically when you put a brace on your arm or leg and keep it together, and your body naturally, you know, solves your illness by just keeping it still. And then we have Sophia Arms Partridge. She wanted to have the Confederate Memorial Day, and she moved all the bodies and helped Mr. Mordecai have his land for the Confederate bodies. And then who else do we – Nebe Broughton for the high school, yeah. And who am I missing?
Nell Lewis.
Nell Lewis.
Who was a very liberal newspaper columnist who then switched to become very conservative in her later years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Robin Simonton, tell me a little bit about what this does. I mean, the idea of, yes, being respectful. So that's something I'm sure that's a concern of yours. But ultimately, what does this do for Oakwood Cemetery? I mean, you know, you assume there's a steady flow of business, so you don't know that. But
Well, what it really does is it goes back – it kind of harkens back to how cemeteries were originally, especially Victorian cemeteries, right? Oakwood, 1869, it was the height of the Garden Cemetery era, where people socialized and they picnicked and couples courted. And so doing activities that bring life into a cemetery really pays homage to how these cemeteries were created. And we at Oakwood love to think outside that proverbial cemetery box and do activities that welcome people into the grounds to be able to enjoy the history and learn a little bit about our own community.
I'm doing everything I can not to talk about it, thinking outside the box.
I can't help myself.
People onto the grounds.
Not into the grounds, yes.
Oakwood, I mean, it's right in the heart of the city, and it's such an important part of the city itself. It really isn't appended to the city. It's right in the heart of things.
Correct. And I think that all of the over 20,000 folks that rest there all have a story to tell. And I think that's always the hardest part every year is, you know, we can only pick 10 or 8 people. We can't pick them all. And so we try to do a sample to be able to show the rest of the people in our community, you know, the folks that have gone before us and have really made a difference.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Robin Simonton is the executive director of Oakwood Cemetery. Also with us from Oakwood Lives Performance, the director, Jackie Nolhoff, and actors George Jack and DJ Wilkes, as well as Anne Forstoffel and playwright Brooke North. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you.
So Oakwood Lives is going to be staged at Oakwood Cemetery this weekend. You can find all the details at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is our technical director. Andrew Tai is our intern. Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.